From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Mark Report. It is the 28th day of May 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana. And then later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard, the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company of Ludlow, Illinois. Along the way, we'll hear how the rootworm might adapt again. That with extension entomologist Mike Gray. And in the second half hour of our program, we call that The Farming World, and it's available on many of these stations and always online at willag.org. We'll talk with Ed Kieser and Drew Lerner all about the weather and their time here at the University of Illinois. It all comes up during this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media.
This stock and commodity report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal, providing clients with the latest market information based on research by ADM Investor Services and other independent sources. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
In Chicago on this Friday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby July wheat of 457 and three-quarter settlement price down a dime for the day. September 475 and a quarter, 10 cents lower on the afternoon. And December in the wheat pit at 505 and a half for the soft red, 9.5 cents for the afternoon lower. In Kansas City, July contract of 481 and a half settlement price down 11 and a quarter. From the corn pit, losses were steep there, down 14 and a quarter in the July, 359. The settlement price. September 369 down 14 and a quarter. December 380 down 13 and a half. And March corn 392 and three quarters down 13 and a half cents. May futures at $4 and a penny and a quarter, down 13 and a half cents for the day. Soy complex now. July beans 937 and three quarters down 14 cents. August 927 and three quarters, 13 and three quarters lower. September 914 and three quarters, 11 and a half lower. November at 907 and three quarters, down 11. And January beans of next year at $9.17 and a quarter, down 11 and a quarter cents. July bean meal at $273.50, down 2.50. July soybean oil at $37.61, down 57. June live cattle, $90.52.5, a dollar and a nickel lower. August live cattle, $89.25, down $1.52.5. And August feeders at $108.42.5 were 7.5 cents lower, though the Septembers were down a dime at $108.50. June lean hog futures at $81.85, up 67.5. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. July crude oil at $73.99 a barrel. Make that 74 even. They're still trading, down 55 cents for the day. June ethanol at $1.60, down a penny and 6 tenths. Natural gas at $4.34 and 6 tenths, up 5 2 tenths. June heating oil at $1.98 even. That's down a penny and 9 tenths. And the gold futures at $1,212.20, up 30 cents on the afternoon. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now at 10,181 is down 77 dollars, or rather down 77 points for the day. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like. It's the last forecast from our own Mike Sola. He says for this evening should be mostly clear across the two-state region. Lows will range from 52 in northwestern Illinois to 64 in southern Indiana. And then tomorrow in the south, partly to mostly sunny skies, elsewhere sunny. Highs will range from 77 in northern Indiana, says Mr. Sola, to 87 in the far south. The extended forecast calls for wide open field conditions in most locations for the next 4 to 5 days. The only exception, says Mr. Sola, will be in fields that experience very heavy rainfall, and that's around the Springfield area and some places other than that. Earlier in the week, crop development will move along quickly with warm temperatures and low relative humidities until moisture returns briefly early next week. Northern and central locations that missed out on that rain this week will begin to see a need for rain next week, he says. Prospects for precip are limited with the exception of rain that forms along a cold front that will move through the two-state area Monday. And southern Illinois and Indiana are expected to receive adequate rainfall, as showers and thunderstorms will be more extensive to the south early next week. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the hour.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Tim Wells in Moline at 309-797-7369. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Friday afternoon. Mike Zuzulo is back in his Friday slot to talk to us about the marketplace. He's at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. You want to swap back to Thursday again this week?
I think I'd like that, Todd. But it's too late, isn't it?
Too late, dude. You're in on a Friday, and it was kind of ugly in the corn pit. Why a big drop, 14 cents lower?
You know, I think it was an overreaction from the outside markets. I mean, we always talk about how the macro fundamentals oftentimes trump the micro, Todd, and I still buy into that, but it seemed like today was a little bit different. And the reason I say it is because late in the session, probably a little after lunch, Chicago time, Fitch, the ratings agency, came out and downgraded Spain's sovereign debt from AAA, the highest rating, and moved it down a notch, but they also said that it was stabilizing as well because of Spain's parliament going ahead and approving an austerity plan, when it be Wednesday night, Thursday morning time period. But the markets just did not take that well at all. They saw the first half of the news, I think, that they'd got downgraded, and we saw the euro collapse to the dollar again, making new daily lows. Didn't make new weekly lows, but made new daily lows, and it seemed like that's all that the corn needed to just continue to see a lot of selling come in. I suspect, I haven't gotten any word back from Chicago yet, but I suspect that most of the buying by the funds, anywhere from 1 to 4,000 contracts, were bought yesterday. I suspect that that was all traded back in today ahead of the three-day weekend, just on fear and nervousness going into next week's G20 meeting, that outside market just overshot us to the downside, would be my take on it.
Yeah, on the lead option, it did some fairly serious, I suppose, technical damage.
It did.
On the daily, at least, it blew through the 100-day big time and then settled even below the 50-day moving average.
Well, on the wheat, which, you know, goes back to being our leader, it was really looking better Wednesday and Thursday. Wheat started to turn around. The wheat corn spread started to be reversed, where they were buying back wheat and selling out of their corn, and we actually had the July wheat hold that 460.5 low on a closing basis on Wednesday, I believe it was. Well, today we closed below that. So next week when we come back, I do think this outside market shot us to the downside too much, but next week when we come back, I'd really like the wheat to come back around quickly. I'd also like the spreads to come back, unlike today. When we got this news today, I noticed how the spreads immediately weakened, and that kind of makes sense fundamentally that if you have more downside in the equities markets, that's going to be the idea will be you're going to lose demand, and that demand's going to be lost in the front end, so the front end falls to the back end. And again, you've got weather uncertainty in the row crops especially. So what we need on our side next week is the wheat and the bull spreads.
Yeah, so you heard me say wheat. I said weekly, but that's fine. And I was talking about the corn pit and the 100-day and the 50s moving below that. But let's stay with wheat for a moment, because when you look at that chart, which is where you were, it turned kind of ugly. There's a couple of gaps in a daily there.
Yeah. I mean, you can't say anything good about the wheat close today, and that's why you need an automatic reversal on Monday night, Tuesday. Going back to the corn, your point is very, very well taken. I was attributing a lot of the downside in the corn on Wednesday and Thursday to that wheat corn spread unwinding, because the wheat corn ratio got down to 90 cents on Wednesday. That was the lowest since April of 2007. So when we started to see the wheat rally to the corn, I actually got a little bit of a psychological lift going in terms of the analysis, because that's what we really need to see. In fact, USDA came out with their updates on their agricultural trade outlook, and that was just released last night, middle of the day yesterday sometime. But they ended up increasing the volume versus their February outlook for wheat and rice and lowered it for coarse grains and corn in particular, in volume terms. And so you can see by that, you know, those numbers switching around from May and what they gave us in February, that the wheat corn spread is indeed starting to have a negative impact on our corn demand globally. And it would have been down more, I suspect, if it hadn't been for the recent Chinese buying.
Wait, so they increased exports for wheat?
Increased exports for wheat and rice by volume, but lowered by about 700,000 tons the coarse grain about 800 to 900,000 tons, this corn in particular.
Oh, interesting. So I guess as we look at it, but what it really means is that what fundamentally most of our analysts, I think, including you, have been talking about for a long time was that June, July, August may not be as pretty as anybody would like it to be because there's so much grain that's still around.
I actually feel like we're still at a 70 to 75% odds that we're going to have a May, June low, Todd. I think that if we can come out of these financial markets, and, you know, we talked about this last Thursday, that if we can find a low here in these financial markets and we get through next week's G20 meeting and next week's monthly unemployment report on, I think, next Friday, if we get through those and build a base, I actually think the grains are ready for a May-June low. I was just looking at the end of the month net changes and how they look compared to the end of December of 09. We've got corn down 13.5%, wheat down 15.5%, beans down 9.5%, and meal down 12%, almost 13%, compared to where we closed on the 30th of December of 2009. So I think we've got enough discount in these markets, especially the row crops, as we head into the weather market. I also feel like that the micro fundamentals will start to play a more active role in price determination. And what I mean by that is I think the Yellow River Basin in China and our corn crop here in the Midwest is going to start to be a more active, actively talked about issue by the trade, and those crop conditions reports every Monday are going to be more and more important.
Okay, I want to go back really quickly because
sure.
I was thinking about what I just said to you and then about what I've heard from our analysts this week and from Wednesday, Thursday, and today. I think everybody has turned the corner to feeling much more like you, that there's faith in the marketplace. What is it that happened in the past week and a half that really made that, you think, happen across yourself and maybe other traders?
Well, for me, it was the outside markets correcting. I never liked the fact that the outside markets have been rallying so hard and so strong to the upside on such weak fundamental news. I didn't like $90 crude oil because I thought it hurt our economy. I didn't like the way the S&P was running ahead with the Asian stock markets because it was building a bubble mentality in my mind. So I like the fact that we've got some reality and some traction of rationality in the equities markets again. I think the other bottom line thing that's happened is the wheat has fallen to price levels that were very competitive globally. I think there's enough disease pressure in the wheat, both hard red and soft wheat. It was interesting. I was talking to one of your fellows out there, fellow radio people out there at KRVN in Nebraska. There's a lot of striped rust problems in the southeast and southern Nebraska crop right now. They're starting to see more and more and more of it. Kansas clients are telling me about wheat pressure. I think the supplies are starting to finally shrink, and the demand, if it holds up, then we've got a brighter picture when it comes to that balance sheet.
Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks, Todd. Have a great day.
Hey, you too, Mike. Mike Zuzlow is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Part of the service from Illinois Public Media is to get information to you as quickly as we possibly can. So Commodity Week airs on many radio stations, including maybe this one, and online at willag.org. Again, our guest this week will be Paul Nelson. He's the president of E. Hedger in Chicago, Illinois. It'll be up on the website by about 6 o'clock tonight. Hey, other things that you can get from the website are pre-opening, opening, and closing market reports, the midday report, sign up for our free weekend newsletter. That won't come out on Memorial Day weekend, but most every other weekend you can pick it up, and it's free. And like everything else, and you can have it all delivered to you automatically in email and podcast off our website. It's all important to us, and we hope it's all important to you as well. Now, up next, you know, the fireflies are out, and Memorial Day is upon us. It means that farmers should be scouting their fields for rootworms.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
It's about this time each year that the annual rootworm hatch takes place. Mike Gray is an extension entomologist at the University of Illinois and has spent many a season digging up and looking for evidence of the devastating little creature on the roots of corn.
Right now across central Illinois, as we enter midway through this last week of May, hatch is undoubtedly underway across central Illinois. But one of the things that we've noticed and are going to continue to watch pretty carefully over the next several years is that hatch moving further and further into the summer. In other words, is it moving beyond Memorial Day? Are we starting to see more of that hatch occur in early June? Because we know that as we increase the level of transgenic hybrids that are out there, we may have caused some selection pressure to be exerted on the rootworm population, favoring a late hatch.
The rootworm is an adaptive little insect. It took about 25 years for its population to favor laying eggs in soybeans instead of corn. Now, farmers knew that a good way to control the rootworm was to rotate crops from one year to the next. When the rootworm, which is a beetle in the adult stage, only lived its life in corn, it was easy to control. But the insect adapted and started living its life in corn and beans. Well, the transgenic crops were designed in part to kill the rootworm. But as this tale begins to reveal, the way the crop kills the rootworm fades with time. Here's Mike Gray.
Because we know that many transgenic hybrids, as they mature throughout the growing season, begin to express lower amounts of those cry proteins in root tissue. So is there some advantage if you're a corn rootworm and you hatch later in the spring and early summer than your cohorts? We think there might be. So that's something we're going to kind of watch over the next several years and see if a pattern begins to emerge.
That is to say, there is not an identifiable pattern at this point, but that it's worth watching to see if the Central Illinois Memorial Day rootworm hatch moves deeper into the calendar. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Well, up next, you know you've likely seen the sticker at the gas pump that says may contain 10% ethanol. That's a corn-based renewable fuel. That 10% blend, as you'll hear, is just a starting point, and one the Illinois Corn Growers and other associations would like to step past. John England's EK Petromart is the first station in downstate Illinois with blender pumps. They're capable of dispensing an ethanol to gas blend at 30, 50, or 85%. That, of course, is compared to the 10% ethanol blend you might find at most of the other pumps. England says he installed the blender pumps because it made good sense for his rural community. It didn't hurt that the Illinois Corn Marketing Board and the Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity seeded him about $20,000 for the pumps, which he says are very expensive because the fittings are made from nickel.
To use that type of product to make these pumps, it makes the pumps between $6,000 and $8,000 a piece more expensive than a conventional gasoline pump. So that grant basically enabled us to put in state-of-the-art blender pumps for less cost than a conditional regular unleaded pump. And what's nice about it is there again we can offer something here in Sullivan that we don't have an option for 30 miles in this area, and there's a lot of people that's very happy about it.
Well, happy about it because it's an important step for the homegrown corn ethanol industry. Tim Lenz is the president of the ICGA.
On behalf of Illinois Corn Growers, I'd like to thank John, the American Lung Association, and also the state of Illinois for this program. We feel that it offers kind of a glimpse of the future, which we hope would more stations will follow. It gives the consumer the opportunity to use what's most economically available for them. It also, of course, cleans the air, as witnessed by the involvement of American Lung Association, and it also helps our economy.
The backers of these blender pumps, corn farmers and the state of Illinois, believe when given a choice, you will fill the tank with more ethanol than gasoline, as long as you own a flex-fuel vehicle. They, the corn farmers, through checkoff dollars, that's their own money, are betting you'll make that choice, and they're fronting some of the money to give you that opportunity. Well, the Sullivan Pump is the first of 20 in the state of Illinois blender pump pilot program. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's a Friday afternoon. Happy Memorial Day weekend. Time now to check the agricultural cash grain market. On the line with us from the Ludlow Co-op Elevator, and the offices there in the elevator at Ludlow, Illinois, is Bruce Bostard. Good afternoon to you, Bruce. How are you today?
It's a beautiful day in Ludlow.
Oh, man, it's a beautiful day here in the Midwest. I hope they have many more of those on tap. We'll find out a bit later in the ag weather, but I kind of think they're headed our way, and maybe even the little further out there headed our way that too for the summer. So tell me about what producers thought about this 14-cent drop in the corn market today.
They're all out planting soybeans, so I really don't know. I haven't seen very many of them except when they've been driving by.
You've seen the planters then, and yeah. I bet they still waved when they drove by, didn't they?
Yeah. If they'd noticed it was down 14, I might not have liked that. But
okay. Well, what did you think of it then? What do you make of that?
Wild markets. I mean, things are wild. They're choppy. Really, no fundamental news behind it, as far as I can see. It's one of those weird month-end numbers, too. So sometimes things get a little bit exaggerated.
You know, as we've talked to our analysts, the brokers, the last 3 days with Zwicker and Zuzalo and Cooley on Wednesday, they all seem a little more upbeat about the marketplace. Do you think they're in the right position?
Well, I tend to go off basis on leading things, and there seems to be the market wanting to be a little bit long on things. We see the processor numbers on soybeans have been leading the way there, and we've seen nearby improvements. There's still positive crush margins on that. Gulf and rail basis was lower, but there's still interest out here, and I don't know. Stuff is growing, and the color looks good, so, you know, we're getting down to some of that nitrogen that was on early, so it's possible to feel more optimistic.
You feel more optimistic, but yeah. I suspect you're still looking at the fundamentals and saying, yeah. Wow, there's a lot of corn crop out
there. There's still a lot of corn crop out there, but, you know, we've just having China as part of the equation, although it's probably not that big of a near-term part, but having them show some interest out there is encouraging also. It's nice to export some of this stuff for a change.
What has your basis been doing?
Lost a little ground on corn earlier. Basically, we've hung in there and been steady on the nearby. We're 17 under. New crop's right around 30, so that's unchanged. Beans, 8 under, so that's 4 or 5 cent improvement for the week.
All right, and you want to give me the prices, too?
We are at 342 on nearby corn and 930 on soybeans.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You have a good Memorial Day weekend.
You too.
Bruce Bostard is with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois, in just a couple of minutes. I'll return when we'll talk about the agricultural weather forecast, and then in the second part of the program on many of these stations, we'll talk with Ed Kieser, a little reminiscing about his time here at Illinois Public Media.
It's National Hamburger Day. The word hamburger comes from Hamburg steak, which originated in the German city of Hamburg. The recipe was brought to North America by German immigrants. By the way, the cheeseburger first appeared in 1924. Credit goes to grill chef Lionel Steinberg of the Right Spot in Pasadena, California. On this day in agricultural history in 1892, the Sierra Club was formed in San Francisco for nature conservation. In 1897, Jell-O was introduced. Pearl Waite, a carpenter and cough medicine manufacturer, produced Jell-O varieties in strawberry, raspberry, orange, and lemon fruit flavors. By the way, the dessert was named by Waite's wife, May. White eventually sold the Jell-O business to a neighbor for $450, who, with the help of a national campaign in Ladies Home Journal, pushed sales by 1902 to $250,000. And in 2003, the first cloned horse was born in a natural delivery. The foal was created in the lab by fusing an adult skin cell and an empty egg, then returning the resulting embryo to the female's womb after a few days. Although clones are currently banned from racing, tissue from many top animals have been stored for cloning. The birth was announced in Nature on August 7th of 2003. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media. It is a Friday afternoon, the 28th day of May. Steve Hiltberg is away. Jim Angel tried to fill in for him this morning, and I had a little technical glitch with that. Kindly enough, Ed Kieser has decided to set in and tell us about the weather for one last time on Illinois Public Media. Ed, thanks for being with us.
Well, I'm still in the building, so I'm glad to be here with you. You know, and I've worked with you a long time, so it's really good to be able to sit down with you again.
So we need to talk about the weather, and then we'll do some reminiscing in the farming world here in a bit. So what do we have?
Well, for doing things outside, the next couple of days are just going to be gorgeous. Tomorrow, well, today even, and then tomorrow and Sunday just look beautiful. There may be a few showers and thunderstorms moving through the area on Monday. And then as we go into next week, it appears that there may be couple of not really strong weather systems, but some disturbances coming through the Midwest that could trigger a few showers and thunderstorms from the upper Midwest on through northern and central portions of Illinois and Indiana and Ohio. So much of the Corn Belt will likely pick up a little bit of rain next week, but amounts will be variable, and we are starting to see a few pockets that are very dry. Nothing of big concern just yet, but we'll be watching that. I think as we go through the next couple of weeks, we're going to start to hear of some places being too dry while others have adequate moisture. But the big picture right now is still, generally speaking, excellent crop growing conditions.
Yeah, the Kevin Papp, who is a listener from Minnesota, he also is I think he's still the president of the Minnesota Farm Bureau, made the trip from his home in southern Minnesota. He's about 100 miles straight south of St. Paul to Indianapolis this weekend. He's going to the 500. Wrote a quick note to me and said everything looked good, but that there were some dry pockets. I'm assuming he was talking about where he was opposed to where we are.
Well, right? the northwestern Midwest has been a little drier in the past week. And, of course, in our neck of the woods, in our listening area, some places have been walloped with very heavy rainfall while others have been missed. So there's just a wide variety of moisture out there. But with the subsoil moisture starting out good, we're still in good shape, but I do think dryness will become a bit more of a concern because the nature of the rain over the next week or so will be hit and miss when it does occur, and it looks as if beginning the end of next week and beyond, there will be several dry days. So I'm sure that dryness will become a little more of a concern than wetness here over the next few weeks.
Did you take a look at the short-term forecast and what things look like for the weekend, in particular for the 500 in Indianapolis on Sunday? Probably not.
I think it should be good there. I'm glad it's Sunday, not Monday, because Monday is when we really get into where scattered showers and thunderstorms will be occurring. There will be some starting to work into the Corn Belt on Sunday, but we'll just say before the race should get in.
All right. Thank you so much.
Have a good afternoon and a good rest of the summer and beyond.
All right. Thanks, Ed. Ed Kieser, Chief Meteorologist at Illinois Public Media, joining us here on a Friday afternoon. He'll stay with us for the farming world on many of these radio stations, and you can hear that, of course, if you'd like. On our website, the address is willag.org. We'll say so long to some of you. For the rest of you, stay with us. This is the Farming World. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason in studio with us this afternoon. Illinois Public Media Chief Meteorologist Ed Keezer around just to reminisce a bit. Ed, things are changing here.
Yeah, they are.
At Illinois Public Media, and the state's had its budget woes. Unfortunately, you're one of those woes. I'm awfully sorry that that's the case. And this is your last really official day on the air at WILL, but we don't want to dwell on that.
Let's talk about Yeah, let's keep it upbeat because it's been, I'll just say, it's been a tough day. Scott Oltoff, who's been with us part-time for the last almost 14 years, and Mike Sola, that was with us for almost a decade, as they say, about an hour, a little hour and a half ago, they left the building. that was hard on me. I've known both of them a very long time, and they've done great work and covered for me when give me the chance to get away at times, and including some of the things we'll talk about.
I want to talk about some of those times because now, Ed, you started in what year here?
I started here in September of 1987.
And I was here in 85 and 86 as a student and then started back full-time in 89 in April and was here with Charlie Lindy, who was the director of the ag programming at the time. And you and I and Charlie spent many a day on the road covering agricultural events. Farm Progress Show was just a load of fun.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, back in those days, I guess they were better times budget-wise because I remember going to the Farm Progress Show every year and also the Illinois State Fair, the Indiana State Fair. of course, numerous Outlook meetings, some of which continue. I know
you
Dave
bet.
Does those. They're more freelance nowadays. But, I was around for the birth of the All-Day Ag Outlook meeting, which we commemorated the 20th year this year.
Yeah.
And, I'll tell you, one of my fondest memories of doing the agricultural broadcasting would have to be from the Farm Progress shows.
Yeah,
it's always a lot of fun.
Those were, oh my gosh, we had a load of fun. Do you remember coming back from
Iowa?
I
don't know how much you want to.
You know what? We could spill some of the beans. We won't say too much. So here's.
I wasn't driving, so I didn't break any laws.
Yeah, right. We had a lot of fun. So we're in a pair of Taurus vehicles. Charlie's driving one, and I'm driving the other. You're my co-pilot.
Mm-hmm.
We come out of where were we? Where was the Farm Progress Show?
It was in the Amana Colonies.
Oh, in the Amana Colonies.
And the other guy with us was our technical director for that was a guy named Mark Tomery.
And was he riding with Charlie?
He was riding with Charlie.
He was riding with Charlie. So we had a pair of teams, and we raced back all the way back to Champaign, Illinois. And that was some. You remember we got to the Quad Cities, and Charlie took the north route. We'd already passed the southern route, and all the interstates were already in place.
Yeah, so there are three options. I know he took one, and he took the other.
And we went through the center of town.
Okay,
we took
the center option.
And I had no idea that when we came out on the other side of the Quad Cities that we'd find him again. He was right there. We came out together.
Happened again, I think, in Peoria, too.
Yeah,
I think he went through the middle
and I went around.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then the good thing happened. Do you remember what we did once we got to Bloomington?
We bought gas.
Yeah,
and,
but you remember how
paid while the other pumped.
Yeah.
and then he said I wasn't racing.
Yeah.
So then we got on the road and we noticed in the rearview mirror this car gaining on us a couple miles back, and you didn't feel comfortable driving too fast. You pulled off at Mansfield and let him fly by thinking he was trying to catch us.
I did. I hoped he didn't get it. I was hoping he didn't get a ticket, too, at that time. But you remember what we did in Bloomington was when we pulled into Bloomington, I gave you a $5 bill. Oh, Charlie was mad. Oh, man, he was mad. I gave you a $5 bill and said, go in and pay because I'm going to put $5 in.
I just remember looking like, why are you doing that? I'm not racing. Charlie's very competitive.
He wasn't the only one, dude.
No, I know, but what I'm saying, you know, you both were competitive and, you know, really built up a great ag service in the process.
That was a load of fun. And just having you along and being with, gosh, we grew up on the radio station here together. I was 24. You were, what,
3 years older than you.
But you were 24 when you started, right?
26.
26 when you started here, so... We've had just a joyous time. It's been a lot of fun.
And I'll just one other quick memory, more recent from Amana. The only two times I went to Amana to a Farm Progress show a few years back, we went there, and I remember Dave Dickey and I going out to the show site the first morning, and after a lot of rain and the car, they made us park. They made us park in the lot. I'm like, are you sure you want to do this? And the car got sunk down all the way. The wheels just
to the
sunk
axles.
Down.
Yeah, yes. I remember coming back out,
and it took a while to pull it out. And well, the car didn't... was covered with mud. And I remember driving back to Illinois. We were driving the speed limit, but everybody driving by us just stared at our car.
Right. Well, they had a mule, not a real mule, but they had a mule and a vehicle, and they just strap. Out at the Farm Progress show, they get when mud comes in, they just strap tires on the front of a vehicle, and they just backed into you or pushed you from behind. They just hit the bumpers and go, and they start pushing you out. It's a funny deal. What else did we do? We went there. Actually, every time we went to the Farm Progress show, it was fun. So, and we always stayed at unique and different places.
Well,
we
I know what you're. I bet I know what you're going to mention.
You want to talk about Sullivan.
Yeah, I knew you were going to mention that. That was a great, with the little house on the prairie.
Yeah.
It was wonderful.
A bed and breakfast. We stayed down there
for the Dalton City show.
Yeah, that was for the Dalton City show. And then, we stayed in a rat trap. Where was that, in Lafayette? Where was
Kokomo?
That?
Well, I hate to say it. Just about every time we went to Indiana, it seemed like we didn't stay at the best places. We saved money when we went to Indiana. You know it's bad when you come out of a place and after taxes it's only about $40, you know, during Farm Progress show time.
You remember that hotel, the upstairs was closed?
Most of it was closed. I think only about 15
rooms. The fire escapes weren't there on that one.
Well, they had a big grill blocking it, and I knew that one was good. That was in Kokomo, and when the manager said, "Have you seen our potbelly pig walking around?" They lost their And there was a kid at the front desk. He must have been about 16, and he said, "Oh, I've been working here for the last 4 years." And it was, yeah, that was interesting. And the room smelled like smoke, and the bed was propped up with some bricks where one of the legs had broken off. Yeah, that was a good place.
Go back further. Did you tell me when you started it, what year was it? Was it
87.
87, but that meant you got to see 88.
Well, my first full growing season was 1988. So what an indoctrination into agriculture in the Midwest. It did an extraordinary year. I'm glad we haven't had another one of those, because that was really record-breaking, and I will never forget the rainfall total in Champaign-Urbana officially at the water survey for the month of June of 1988, 32 hundredths of an inch for the entire month. And I remember driving up to a conference in Chicago, and there were a couple thunderstorms with no rain, really. There were just lightning and maybe a few spits, and that was it. It was just extraordinary, and glad that doesn't happen every year. I know all our listeners are glad that doesn't happen.
Well, I suppose.
That's the more recent benchmark on bad years as far as growing conditions. And reminded everybody of the 30s. And actually, that year we tied the record with 1936 with the most days of 90 degrees or higher.
Yeah, and then it wasn't all too that much longer in 93.
The floods.
And it was the floods were, depending on where you were, they were as bad as the drought was.
Yeah, the floods were incredible. And actually, in recent years, we've had probably more problems with excessive water than not enough. You know, every year there's places that have dry pockets, but in recent years, there's really been some periods of extremely wet weather.
Now, what do you see in the future of meteorology? What's coming? How far can they get out with a decent weather forecast?
Well, there's always going to be limitations. I think that the two areas that are being worked on the most in terms of forecasting are the very short term, improving the accuracy and precision of severe weather forecasting, and then looking out farther. And right now, the models we look at generally go out about 2 weeks. And as you get into the second week, they're not very accurate. And they'll never be completely accurate because there's just too many variables, and small-scale things influence the big scale over time, and you can't resolve all those small-scale things and crank out the the information out 16 days and beyond. But there's been an incredible amount of improvement in forecast technology in my career here at WILL. When I started here, I had to go to the Atmospheric Sciences Department a couple times a day to just look at some maps that came off this thermally or chemically treated paper that burned in images thermally to see the maps. And those printers cost $20,000. WILL couldn't afford one of those even then, and certainly wouldn't be able to now. And there's very little data. And what I like to say is when I started here, I looked for every piece of data I could find to make a forecast. Now there's so much available, I have to choose what to look at. I have to make choices that way because there's just so much. So it's changed a lot.
You have much more data. Has it make meteorologists more accurate? I mean, is the data that good or is it just more data?
Well, I think meteorologists have to refocus on what they do, but there's still some that are better than others because I have a lot to look at, but I'm still making the decisions on what to look at.
It used to be that you wouldn't go out more than 7 or 8 days.
Right. Well,
for 3 or 4, comfortable.
Yeah. Well, a 5-day forecast was a big deal when I started here, and the Weather Service's 6 to 10 day outlook was issued just 3 times a week, and it wasn't very good. But everybody hung on that 6 to 10 day outlook. They always embargoed it until after the close of the markets on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And you know, so over time, we've gone from that to where we are looking out 2 weeks. On a day-to-day basis, even though, as I mentioned, a lot of times the second week it's fantasy land, it's not really all that accurate. But we can see some big trends now that we couldn't see then. So I don't see us getting to where we can look out day-to-day much beyond 2 weeks anytime soon. I see more of trying to improve the forecast going out about 2 weeks.
Well, we've been awfully privileged to have you on the staff here at WILL and serving Illinois and Indiana producers. We do appreciate it greatly and all the work that you've done.
Well, I enjoyed it. And, you know, it's a bittersweet moment, but I'll get to spend more time with my family. My wife and daughter live in Columbus, Ohio. My wife has a job at Ohio State, so I'll get to spend time with them. And also, I'm still young enough. I'm not as young as we were when we started, but you know, I don't know what's exactly coming next, but I am looking forward to at least a chance to do something else before all is said and done. And so that part excites me. I'm kind of nervous because I don't know what's next, but at the same time, it is exciting that I'm hoping this opens some doors. But I also want to say the ag audience has been just wonderful, and I know a lot of you have expressed your just your appreciation, and I want to express my appreciation to you. It's because of you I've had the chance to and privilege to serve you all these couple decades plus.
Ed, thank you so very much for all you've done for us. We do appreciate it.
Well, thanks, Todd, and thanks for being such a good friend, too.
You too, Ed. Ed Kieser, Chief Meteorologist for Illinois Public Media. On his last day here, I will say this. We're going to talk to Drew Lerner in a moment, and Drew will be picking up some things during the pre-opening market report. I did check with Ed because I didn't want to be in bad taste yesterday when it was kind of his official last day here. He said it was all right, so you'll hear a bit from Drew Lerner and about the weather in a moment. Thanks much, Ed. I have a question for you, and it's pretty simple, though I need an honest answer. Many of you have called and written and talked to us just a bit about this program we call The Farming World. And you say, yes, we like The Farming World. We think it's a program that's worth listening to. I've also heard that it makes the program awfully long. An hour is a long time during your day. What I want to know honestly from you is whether you think it's worth doing or not. It's important to us to know whether this program, The Farming World, is something that makes a difference to you and helps you to understand agriculture. If not, we need to change The Farming World or to do something different. It certainly is a lot of work for both Dave Dickey and I. I don't want to get out of the work. I just want to know whether the work we're doing is worthwhile. So if you like it or if you don't like it, please do give me a call or write me an email. The numbers are 217-333-9697. That's 217-333-9697, or email to tgleason@illinois.edu. That's tgleason@illinois.edu. Please do be honest about the program. We really want to know whether it's worth your time and ours. This is The Farming World. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Drew Lerner is on the line with us today to talk about the weather forecast for the coming summer. Thanks so much, Drew, for this extended bit of discussion on the weather. Have you been doing much looking out over the next 3 months to tell us what June, July, and August might be like?
I certainly have. That doesn't mean that I've got the right answer, but I have an answer. It looks as though the summer will be relatively favorable, at least initially. We're going to continue to see alternating periods of rain and sunshine, along with a seasonable temperature range that will have a slight cooler bias at times, and we'll also have some warmer conditions at times. Really, through the month of June, it looks real good. After that, we have the potential for seeing a little bit more ridginess around. And when we get a little bit later in the season, August and September, I think the odds are real high that we will see a drier finish to the season. Now, this may have an impact on the soybeans, but I'm not quite sure that it's going to have much of a negative impact on corn because we got so much of that done, planting done so much earlier than usual this year, and we'll be done with all the reproduction before we get too dry in most areas.
When you take a look at this as a meteorologist, how do you make calculations for a month out or 2 months out? What kinds of things are you looking at?
Well, we look at a lot of different things, long-term trends, cycles in the atmosphere. You know, the atmosphere, believe it or not, is full of all kinds of trends. And none of them ever agree with each other, which is why we can't seem to ever get this just right. But we look at solar cycles. We look at ocean cycles, you know, the La Niña and El Niño phenomenon, which are actually between the solar cycle and the ENSO, as we call it, the El Niño-La Niña events. Those are the two probably most important driving forces for long-term trends. And then we've got smaller cycles we look at, little 10-day events. We have some that go several weeks out at a time. And then there's little pockets of ocean temperature biases that pop up in different places of the world, which help to support higher low pressure systems, and you have to kind of throw all that in. One of the advantages that I have over perhaps a more local meteorologist would be the fact that I look at the entire globe every day. I have to make forecasts for every area in the world every day, and so I've got a pretty good idea what's happening all the time, and I can pick up on a lot of these little trends that start to evolve. I mean, we can funnel that into the longer-term outlook if we become confident on how long those little trends will last.
And then the next question is, how much and how good is the information and data that comes from a long time ago? For instance, I think it's probably been since 1988 that there's been a real widespread drought across the bulk of the Midwest.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And we have a lot of good data actually going back into the late 1800s, but it's not enough. To be real honest with you, know, the planet's been around here for a lot longer than you or I or and a whole lot of other people, and we just don't have a good database that, of data that goes back more than 115 years. And the United States is a little bit special relative to the rest of the world because we have this wonderful climate storage system that we've got out in the Carolinas that it keeps all this historical data, and we can go back and look at it in great detail. But, you know, if we just want to go up to Canada and look at some data up there, they don't have nearly the data storage that we have, and so it becomes a little more difficult task, and it becomes even more impossible when you start looking at Africa or some of the other places like China, you know, where they don't share data very well. They may not even have it, but we would never know. So it becomes a little bit more challenging. So in answer to the question about the data availability and the reliability and all that, it's not very good. Certainly in the U.S., we have an excellent database, and we can look at a lot of trends as they impact North America, but it becomes a little bit more of a challenge in the rest of the world.
And finally, next week, you began a stint with Illinois Public Media as a daily forecaster during our morning ag programs, which anybody can access at willag.org. I'm sure that Dave Dickey, Director of Ag Programming, is looking forward to that. I am as well, and I hope you are too.
I am, most definitely. I always enjoy doing work for you all, and this new product is going to be a good one. I think we're going to be able to sit down and look at the U.S. weather, in particular the Midwest, in great detail every day, and be able to not only make note of the short-term outlook, but when we start seeing something that changes in the long run, we'll be able to share that with a lot of people out there, and hopefully some better decisions can be made in the farming world as far as when the best time will be to do you know, our planting or our spraying or that kind of thing. So
thank you so very much, Drew. We do appreciate you taking the time with us.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City, Missouri. And beginning next week on Tuesday morning, June the 1st, will be part of the opening market report. You can listen to it anytime you'd like at willag.org at willag.org. Many thanks to Drew for joining the team at Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You've been listening to The Farming World.
Agricultural information is made possible. Support for the...